What you have before you is the preface to L'année liturgique, the liturgical year, which is one of the foundational documents of the liturgical movement in the Roman Catholic Church. It's hard for us who live in an era where universal participation in the liturgy is presumed and is expected, it's hard for us to realize how recent that development is. And it isn't just a question of people being discouraged by ecclesiastical authorities from participating in the liturgy or being impeded somehow socially from doing that. It isn't simply that. It's the fact that prior to the 19th century development of the liturgical movement, the liturgy was not thought of as being a place where the majority of the people of God could or should try to find an experience of their own sanctification. It was presumed on the part of many church leaders and on the part of many lay authors that the real goal of spirituality was to have each individual have their own private devotional experience, which would be nourished and sustained by their own private prayer, and not that their full experience of liturgical texts or mysteries recurring throughout the liturgical year, or even of their gathering together with other Christians regularly at Mass or at other celebrations, would be the primary place where they would experience sanctification and deepening union with God. It just wasn't what people expected. There was a very strong emphasis in the late 18th and early 19th century on devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus and eventually a little bit later to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, which was strongly emphasized. And in the later 19th century, there was a real conflict between those who emphasized the liturgical movement on the one hand and others who emphasized private devotions and especially devotion to the Sacred Heart as against the liturgical movement. There was a presumption that making people aware of the texts of the liturgy, that is to say, expecting people to be conscious of what was being said in detail, to listen to the prayers, to listen to the readings, to focus and to meditate on those, that would be too much, would be too bewildering for the ordinary people of God, and that instead they needed a specific image redolent of God's love, and that was to be found particularly in the Sacred Heart. So there was something tremendously revolutionary and strongly opposed, and to that extent one has to look upon Guéranger's works as rather heroic and pioneering in their presumption that the liturgy is not something for the intellectual few, for the monastically well-trained, or for the spiritually advanced or elite, but the liturgy is a place of universal participation in God's grace and a place where real sanctification can occur. These were revolutionary thoughts in the time of Prosper Guéranger. There is a link on this page, just above the big letters, the liturgical year, to biographies of Guéranger, and for those who are interested, I'd invite you to take a look at those. They'll give you more details of his life, but let me just summarize rather briefly that Prosper Guéranger was a diocesan priest who experienced the lack of monasticism following the French Revolution, the virtually complete and wholesale extinction of Benedictine monastic life in France in his day, and along with the Romantic movement of his day, a movement that looked towards the Middle Ages and towards medieval piety as having the potential to help supply what seemed to be lacking in the church of their day. He felt that a return to and a recovery of monasticism would be a very great benefit. And so he purchased the Abbey of Solesmes, which had gone on the market, and together with some similarly minded diocesan priest friends, he established a community under the auspices of the local bishop, which was eventually accorded by the Pope the status of being a Benedictine community, and Guéranger was named its first abbot. And that was the beginnings of Solesmes. In other words, Guéranger did not enter an existing Benedictine monastery. He was not formed by a community. He himself was the interpreter and informer of his own community based on his reading of the rule, based on his understanding of what monks had been in the past. It was a new idea and very much came from his own expectation and his own interpretation of what monastic life should be and should be about. And for him, the liturgy was central. It was the primary focus, the primary purpose and goal, and the place of union with God for the Benedictine monk and nun. And then, as you see, if you look in the liturgical year, he emphasizes, and this is a document not written primarily for monastics, but written as an introduction to the liturgy for the whole people of God, which had as its goal opening up to the eyes of the whole people of God the prayers of the Liturgy of the Hours and of the Mass, so that the daily cycle of the divine office, which he encouraged the laity to pray and for monks and nuns to rediscover and to deepen in, and the weekly and annual cycle of the liturgical year experienced in the Liturgy of the Eucharist, to become central transforming places and experiences for people. As one reads through this preface, his goal is to emphasize this, to make it as attractive and delightful as possible. And one has to admit that the document is a very romantic document. It's very typical of its period. It reads like something from the middle of the 19th century. It's very flowery. In some cases, it's rather polemical. Guéranger was not so much a scientist of the liturgy, he was not so much a liturgical scholar, as he was a very informed enthusiast who then wanted to make the liturgical round of the year and the texts of the liturgical year available to people, and was filled with a fiery zeal for doing that. And this preface is, in many ways, his song, his clarion call, his emphasis on how this can be done. If one drops down, for example, into his historical section, beginning at number 6, he talks about the problems of his own day. He mentions the fact that there was a kind of indifference that had settled in, particularly during the 17th and 18th centuries, and as he puts it, social prayer was made to give way to individual devotion. The whole goal, or one of the most important goals of his emphasis on the liturgy, is that prayer and the experience of moving towards God can again become something not individualistic, but something social, something that we do together. This is very much, of course, in harmony with St. Benedict's model of moving together towards Christ. We go together into relationship with God. So liturgical prayer, which by definition happens primarily in a social context, is for him something that needs to be restored and emphasized in an era where individual prayer and individual practices are being overemphasized. Now, I have reduced to a kind of footnote paragraphs 7 to 9, and this is a reminder to us of the fact that this is a polemical document. What he has to say here in paragraphs 7 to 9, which you may read if you wish, but I don't really encourage you to, about Protestantism is not very edifying and not very accurate. Reflecting the prejudices and in some cases the biases of his time, Guéranger is not a very ecumenical individual. His goal was to rediscover the beauty and the mystery of the Roman liturgy. And if one drops down towards the end of this document, one will discover when he describes his methodology and his approach that he does not intend to particularly emphasize, and this comes up in number 21, too much from the Eastern liturgies. He refers to monotony of phrases and endless repetitions which spoil the real unction or devotion of these traditions. These are not the words or the sentiments of a very ecumenically gifted individual. And one has to go further. If you are desirous of reading more in Guéranger, and it is easily downloadable from the web, there is an additional optional link available to his introduction to the mystery of Paschaltide, if you want to look at that, although there's no lecture of mine that goes along with that. Be prepared, if you read widely in Guéranger, for not only his polemical tone occasionally against Protestantism, but unfortunately also even for hints of the anti-Semitism that characterized both the devotion and the historical sense of his era. one has to regard those who have gone before from the perspective of the limitations and even the prejudices that existed in their time. So steel yourself against that in these texts. Nevertheless, I would encourage you to read this preface and note and try to envision in your own heart what this might have meant to a generation of people for whom the liturgy was somewhat of a closed book. People understood the general sweep and flow of the liturgical movement, but the idea that they should really penetrate into and understand the meaning of texts, the significance of the symbols that follow one after another during the course of the liturgical year, this was something new. And in this preface to his liturgical year, Guéranger reveals how desperately eager he is to make this available to the whole people of God. We will now consider how this was applied in the context of a particular monastic community, that is to say, the community of Stanbrook in England, just as a brief example of how Guéranger's work affected other monastic families than his own.